Good morning. We are Tamara Wilkinson
and Becky Badigo.
And welcome to the next episode of The Scarlet Letter, the podcast of the Feminist Legal Studies Group at Monash University's Faculty of Law. As you know, we're beginning this podcast series by interviewing members of the Feminist Legal Studies Group. In today's episode, we're focusing on the work of our family violence researchers, one of the six areas of research strength we have in our Feminist Legal Studies Group. Our six areas of particular research strength are family violence, alcohol, drugs, and gender, the impact of energy policy and climate change upon women, women's economic empowerment, including labour rights, taxation, unpaid work, and privacy, women, poverty, and the international movement, and reproductive health and abortion reform. Joining me in the interviewing chair is Becky Badigol, co-convener of our Feminist Legal Studies Group, and whose work also focuses on family violence.
Today, we're interviewing barrister, academic, and card-carrying feminist Dr. Renata Alexander. Renata is the leader of our Family Violence Discipline Group here at Monash.
Renata's main areas of research and practice is family law. Renata has been a barrister at the Victorian Bar since 2002. She's also a senior lecturer teaching various undergraduate and postgraduate subjects such as parents, children and the state, professional practice and forensic family law. Renata has worked as an in-house family lawyer with Victorian Legal Aid before working as the Deputy Registrar for the Family Court of Australia. Renata then went to the Victorian Bar in November 2002, where she practices on a part-time basis given her teaching and academic commitments.
Welcome, Renata.
Thank you.
Perhaps you could start by telling us how you were introduced to feminism.
Well, I grew up in a family that was Holocaust survivors who came to Australia in the 1960s, and I came as a child. I was 5 years old. And I think my sister and I were imbued with that sense of gender equality, cultural integration, and also socialism. So from an early age, I went to a socialist Zionist youth group, and there were certainly lots of feminist seeds planted in that time, which was in the 60s and the early 70s. The other thing I think that helped with developing my feminist ideas was Monash University, dare I say, the law school in the 70s. So I started here in 1973. I was finding some of the subjects quite difficult, particularly contract, I remember, and property was very difficult for me. It didn't sit well with my ideas. And in the 1976, I was a founding member of Feminist Lawyers. So Feminist Lawyers started here, notwithstanding what the University of Melbourne might say. It was a Monash Law School initiative. There were a number of female students. We were in our fourth and fifth year, and we set up the first Women in Law Conference. And one of the founding members, Bibi Loft, still has a poster, and it talks about the issues that we talked about at that conference and the speakers, and they were family violence, pretty much exactly what we talk about now, rape and sexual assault, gender equality, women in the workforce, particularly in the legal profession, because at that time we only had, and this might seem minor, we only had 2 toilets for female students in the entire law building.
Wow.
So I guess they were the sort of the early seeds of my involvement in feminism, just pretty much. And also I remember reading The Women's Room when I was in about fourth year and going to a meeting at the Union Building, what I call the Union Building, which is the campus centre. And there was a women's room up there and you could sit and chat and talk to like-minded females, really. We didn't really accept any boys in feminist groups.
So when Becky said you're a card-carrying feminist, that's certainly not an exaggeration.
No, I know. I'm very proud.
That's excellent.
Yeah, and over the years, too, I think I've chosen which battles I'm going to fight. So I think I was far more, I wouldn't say radical, but I was much more assertive when I was younger. And I think now I'm more selective about the battle because I think about the long term, the war, rather than about the individual obstacles along the way.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah. So why do you think that feminist ideas resonated with you particularly? You mentioned a bit about, socialism. Obviously, the two go well together. Is that sort of the crux of it?
I think so. I think it was that left-wing liberal, also coming from a history, of a cultural history of persecution.
Mm.
And I think also there were some really important writers in the 70s and 80s that resonated with me. I spent a year, I'm not a big fiction reader, but I spent a year only reading women writers. I decided that only lasted for 12 months. but I just thought, you know, it almost sounds cliched, but people from the 70s and 80s, the works from those times were very, you know, very important to me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that I was living in an oppressed relationship or anything, or my, you know, my family background was very healthy and supportive. I just, something about not just feminism, but particularly about family violence mm. and about child abuse from when I started pretty much in 1977 and then in, when I did my articles in 1978.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
Now, Renata, you're sitting here with the most fabulous pair of swirly pink and purple tights, and you're known for your collection of outrageous tights, and they certainly brighten most outfits you wear. Have you ever got into trouble for wearing bright tights?
I haven't got into trouble for wearing bright tights, but in the early 80s, there was a front page story that a senior solicitor in the family court was dressed down or criticised for wearing a pantsuit. And interestingly, she went on to become a judge of the county court. But when that became front page news, the delegation of feminist lawyers, led by me, at the family court, went to see the senior judge and said, "Do you have a problem? What's the issue about dress code?" Because he was the judge who'd criticised her.
Mm.
And I think he was quite taken by our assertiveness because he said, looked at me and said, "Renata, I look forward to seeing your legs in my court." I should have recorded that. And he said, "I don't mean that in any bad way. I just like, you add a splash of colour to my courtroom." So I thought that was very sweet. And I've never, ever had an issue about wearing tights. I've been called a harlequin by a certain judge. I thought he was calling me a harlot, but he made it quite clear he was calling me a harlequin. And I've pretty much been accepted because the rest of me is quite demure and conventional, so that just adds a bit of colour, but I haven't had any trouble.
But when you were a legal aid lawyer in the 1980s, you were told to sit down, girly, by a male judge. Can you tell us that story and what that experience was like as a young lawyer and how it affected you?
Yes, it was a case. I was appearing in front of a judicial registrar who was like an associate judge in a family court. It was an interim hearing by submissions. I was a solicitor then at legal aid. The applicant had finished his submissions and I got up with my client sitting behind me to make some submissions about this case, a parenting case, and the associate judge just said, the judicial registrar said to me, "Sit down, girlie, I haven't finished." And I thought he had finished and he wasn't chastising me for interrupting and not letting the first solicitor or barrister speak. It was because he hadn't finished talking about football. So he and my male opponent had a chat about who won what on the Saturday night and the Sunday afternoon, and then he looked at me and said, "Now you can start." So after that, I was fairly outraged and I was already 30 years old and I was being called a girly, but more seriously, just that amazing sense of being put down. I was a female, it was irrelevant, it was unrelated to, you know, I obviously wasn't part of the boys' talk about football. Nothing to do with my client, who was obviously distressed, although the outcome was fine. So we had a feminist lawyers meeting that week and I told the story, and that's where the column came from, incident. We were writing, and we still do write, a column for the alternative law journal called Sit Down Girlie. So I'm the original girlie.
And so tell me about that column today.
It's shared primarily, well, there are a couple of people have been writing it, and they pretty much scan anything to do with feminist issues, law issues. It's a very popular column, primarily written by Beth Wilson, and she has amazing pseudonyms that are just very amusing. And every 5 years or so, they do a compendium of the columns so you can read all the pieces. And it's very, and every few years, someone, and that incident happened in the mid-80s, every few years, someone puts their hand up and says, oh, I'm the girly. And then I have to write a rejoinder and say, no, it's actually me. It's very funny. I don't know why there's this issue about ownership of being a girly from the 80s, but it's definitely me because I was there.
The original girly.
I'm the original girly.
So the topics that you focus on, your areas of expertise, are very influenced by feminism. Can you tell us a bit about that and a bit about how feminism has influenced your work?
Well, I've pretty much concentrated in my practice and in my teaching and research on family violence. And perhaps it came from when I was doing articles. I was articled to a single practitioner who was very good, but we were in the same office. He did a lot of family law. And I think it was triggered then. I also did family law as an undergraduate elective here at Monash. But there was something always about family violence and child abuse particularly that talked about power dynamics and the imbalance of power and the role of women. And I was interested in the division of labour and gender stereotypes. And so that's what I concentrated on. Pretty much from when I did a postgraduate diploma in family law, which we used to run in the early 80s, and then I did my master's on family violence, it was called domestic violence then, and they were called battered women, and my whole thesis was about remedies for battered women, and then that progressed, and I did my PhD on gender issues with a big focus on family violence. So that does sit very well with feminism, and really, in a way, it's a little bit old school, really. It's sort of what I would call the second wave of feminism. The postmodern feminist framework for me doesn't sit as well with what I've been researching. So I'm sort of concentrating really on how women get by and how they survive violent relationships, what happens to their children, what happens to them in terms of their financial position, in terms of their emotional well-being.
Yeah.
And so that's what I do in practice when I can, and primarily what I do in my research and publishing, and also my students.
Renata, when I first read your work, when I was a PhD student, I think you had not long finished, I read a series of strong and well-argued pieces from the late 1990s on why family violence cases shouldn't go to family mediation or family dispute resolution, as we call it now. Those articles really stuck with me, and they still do today. Can you explain your arguments then, and 20 years on, do you still agree with what you wrote then?
Yeah, I still do agree. I'm a one-person lobbyist against family dispute resolution in family law. Unfortunately, it became compulsory in 2006, so I lost that battle, with some exemptions, of course. But one of my areas was looking at the mediation process and looking at outcomes. So the process had some issues about who the mediators were, their training, their backgrounds and disciplines. Also about the participants in mediation, that generally women, and without generalising, but generally women are less assertive, less able to advocate for themselves, and more interested in maintaining relationships rather than creating conflict, and more focused on children than themselves. Men tend to be more assertive about their own interests and their own needs. And then I looked at outcomes and the longevity of mediated outcomes, and often there were some analyses done by the Australian Institute of Family Studies where, and it's hard to compare, but generally in property cases women were agreeing to less than they would have got had they litigated, and of course litigation's got issues about cost and emotion and delay and waiting periods. But women were forfeiting entitlements. And they were also agreeing to parenting regimes that were not really child-focused, but were really to allay or to assuage a fairly assertive or aggressive partner. So my views haven't really changed. There are exemptions now to family dispute resolution to do with family violence, but there are some mediators and FDR practitioners, family dispute resolution practitioners, who will still mediate pretty much anyone. And I don't think there's consistency in terms of screening.
Mm-hmm.
And family violence is a serious contraindicator, along with other issues. So I still have that problem about power imbalance, about who the mediators are, sole mediators versus co-mediators and their backgrounds, about the outcomes. And again, I'm not saying litigation is the answer, but it's really just one tool. And I think it's actually not being as used as people had hoped when the Act was changed in 2006. So the short answer is, that's a long answer, the short answer is yes, I'm still opposed to FDR.
Okay, thank you.
Renata, you've been volunteering at community legal centres for over 40 years, especially at St Kilda Legal Service, where you've been a volunteer since 1976 when you were a fourth year law student. You're one of the longest serving legal service volunteers in Victoria. And for this work, you've received the Public Interest Law Clearinghouse's Community Legal Centre Award in 2000 and the Centenary Medal in 2001, which recognises citizens who have contributed to Australian society or government. Do you see any connection between this work and your feminism?
I think all of us, whether whatever kind of upbringing we've had or what our profession is, I think we need to give back somehow to the community. And because I had that strong sense of social justice, you know, through my parents and my sister, I've always wanted to work in the community. So I've worked at a community legal centre. It happens to be my local one where I grew up and I went to school, and I know the area really well. And I think even if you're doing the fairly mundane cases, I might see three or four clients each week and I'll do a divorce or a car accident or something. I think there are issues there that are related to power imbalance between the property. You know, we have a lot of tenants, we have a lot of consumers, a lot of people who are in debt. We have a lot of clients who might have child abuse or family violence or intervention order cases, so I do those. So I think there is, it doesn't mean I have to walk around with a sign saying I'm a feminist, left wing, you know.
Yeah.
But I think those sort of principles come out, and that's just a really day-to-day, something that you can do that actually makes a difference. You don't have to write a paper about it. You don't have to say you're changing the world. You're just helping three or four people a week. And that's just as useful, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Renata, your practice as a lawyer covers CLC work. You also work in our professional practice program here, supervising law students learning to do legal practice, and also you're a barrister. Have you ever been asked by a client to do something that contradicts your feminist values, and what do you do in that circumstance?
It's interesting, but as a barrister, I usually don't get those sort of cases because I think people know that I don't. But I also have the principle of first cab off the rank. Mm-hmm. So I haven't really had clients that have been challenging to my values. I may have acted in maybe half a dozen cases for abusive men, and that's okay too, because they're entitled to some legal advice and they're entitled to representation. So I don't cut people off immediately by saying, no, you don't sit comfortably with my principles. Obviously, there are cases that I wouldn't do if they were a real affront to what I believe in, but I haven't had that situation.
Yeah. And what about in your community legal centre practice? Has that happened?
It has happened, and one notable thing happened. A woman came in for some legal advice. I was the only lawyer. It was during the day, actually, when I was a daytime volunteer. And she came in and she said, oh, I need some legal advice. I said, that's fine. And she said, I don't want to speak to any Jewish people. I don't want to speak to a woman. And because she was Polish, she said, I don't want to speak to anyone who has any connection to the Polish community. And I speak Polish. I'm not member of the Polish community, but I do speak Polish, and I got up and I did a tap dance. I swear this is true, and I said, this is your lucky day. 3 out of 3. And all three of those things. And she reported me to the management, but that was about it. That was in the it was in the legal service. So that's really the only time I've had that kind of confrontation.
Yeah.
Wow.
Not as much as I would have thought as a
non-practitioner. No, I haven't. And even in court, whether by clients or... Look, there are clients who might say things I don't agree with, and I will tell them I may not agree, but I still have to focus on what their case is about. Mm-hmm. And certainly through legal service, the same. I don't just comply and say, yes, you're right. I'll tell them what my view is and say, look, I don't agree with that. But we still have to see what, you know, we just try to work out an outcome.
Well, thank you, Renata. I've learnt so much more. I've been a colleague of yours for the last 10 years or so, and I've learnt so much more in the last 15 minutes than I have in the last 10 years about some of that. Thank you very much. Really enjoyed that.
Thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening to The Scarlet Letter.